Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
I'm blind!
Oh, what happened now?
Well, it's either too much, you know, masturbating or looking at the solar eclipse. And being that I haven't done either, I'm not sure why I'm blind.
I was going to say, we didn't get a solar eclipse in Minnesota.
Nope. The only way we'd ever have a clear day here is if someone said, there's a spectacular cloud formation, super rare in Minnesota. Boom. We'd have a clear day.
Yes.
But nope, we didn't see any of that.
It didn't even get extra dark that I could tell.
No, it didn't really. Not, you know, so.
Because it was a very heavy cloud cover, and it was already kind of dark because of the cloud cover. And it rained, I think, from Saturday night. It rained until, like, this morning.
Which isn't bad because, not to get too much meteorological, which us Minnesotans are wont to do, we need the rain. So that's not a bad. And it wasn't a gully gushing, blow out your sewer rain. It just was steady and then light and then steady. So it soaked itself into the ground. What we need is, like, a thunderstorm to get the nitrates in the air to get everything budding. They got it in Iowa. They got a tornado too, but you know.
They can have the tornadoes.
Yeah, we don't need those.
You know what we got?
Oh, we're talking to a guest who's opening up a comic store or by the time this podcast drops has opened it or what?
Got previews.
Oh, previews. That's what this thing is. Yep, this is your interactive previews episode. Now, I will say one thing.
When Joe's going to go broke.
Ordered, you know, I always suggest things that had I won the lottery, spoiler warning, I didn't, I would have bought all these things. So again, your mileage may vary, but I swear the first three catalogs of the month were like a desert oasis. I was scraping to find things. This time around, I was like, oh, I've got like, normally I do like two pages full of things to recommend because I handwrite my notes. I've got three, and there's omnibuses, there's collected, there's all sorts of amazing things in this catalog. So I'll give you my recommendations. Corey will give us his. If you got something you want to recommend, this is an interactive podcast, mostly interactive for you, because if you got the previews catalog, it's number 427 for comics. Well, it's April 24 for comics 2 months from now, and graphic novels probably a little bit farther out. And, of course, we've got the Marvel supplement and the DC Connect that go along with it. But before we get too far into it, Corey will take us through what I like to call the cover. What's on the cover this month?
The cover for the comic side is the new Doctor Who joined the 15th Doctor in his all-new comic adventures. These are comics for June, so this is coming out in June of 2024. On the back cover is Weapon H.
I had a friend.
A Marvel character that crosses the Hulk with Wolverine.
I had a friend see that and he looked at it like, oh my God, what is that? He was shocked. And I go, yeah, it's Hell Hulkiverse?
Hulkverine.
Hulkverine, thank you. Yeah. I read it. It's actually a pretty good series if you can read it. But that's the statue, and he's the newest.
Then on the spine for Omni is the book Cult of the Lamb, which I swear to God, every place on the internet wants me to buy because those ads are following me everywhere.
You know the one that just popped up recently? IDW's, I think it's IDW, has the complete Terminator.
Yeah.
Somebody has
it. I'm seeing a lot of that because a lot of writers and artists who have worked on it are posting it everywhere.
Yeah, and I got it like an ad in my Facebook feed because I'll look at them, but it's expensive. It's about $100 for the trades, and they have slipcase and hardcovers. And I'd love to do it, but it's funny because who was it, Archie or somebody else that tried a Kickstarter and got shamed out of the marketplace?
Archie.
And now it's like, eh. I've seen Dynamite do it. I've seen IDW do it. I've seen cool, whatever. It's just, it's another way to get a very niche product out without having to go through previews. And then, as we'll talk about later, you'll probably make copies to put in the Diamonds catalog anyway. So, should we start with what we always start with, Marvel?
We start with DC. D oh, okay. comes before M.
Yeah, well, I always look at Marvel first. But in this case, it's the DC Connects issue number 47. And I might as well go right into it right there on the cover. The sequel to Batman Gotham by Gaslight. On page one, well, it's on the cover right there. Gotham by Gaslight, the Kryptonian Age, which is a sequel to the Batman Gotham by Gaslight. But DC is bringing back the Elseworlds logo, imprint? I don't know imprint. What you call it. Imprint. Which is interesting because they worked their ass off to get rid of it. And now it's coming back. So, again, we've talked about in the past change of bosses, I guess. And they realize, hey, let's bring this imprint back and let's have some fun with it. So right away on page two, you've got Batman Gotham by Gaslight, the Kryptonian Age. The new era of Elseworlds kicks off with the return of its crown jewel, the mysterious and gothic world originated by Brian
Augustine.
Augustine, thank you. Again, dummy me, didn't bring my readers with me. And Mike Mignola. When a mysterious meteorite falls on the wide open plains of the Midwest, it will unleash a chain of events that find Gotham's bizarre Batman contending with not just twin threats of Catwoman and a mysterious international assassin, but also the emergence of superhuman beings beyond all comprehension. This expands the 19th century DC universe beyond the confines of Gotham City. And if you aren't smart enough to either have picked up Gotham by Gaslight or found it in a dollar bin somewhere, right across on page three, there's a facsimile edition. So you can pick up the now classic tale that reimagines Batman in Gotham City in 1889. So this is a 12-issue series, which means I will probably pick it up as an inevitable graphic novel or an omnibus. I hope if they do it, they put Gotham by Gaslight in it as well. You hear that, DC? I just gave you an idea. Is this on your buy list, Corey?
Not till it's a trade.
Okay, not so we're the same way. Speaking of which, Corey, you may take the next couple pages.
On page four and five, we have DC versus Marvel Omnibus, and then DC versus Marvel, the Amalgam Age Omnibus. I did not realize DC was going to be the one printing both of these, which is, to my mind, a little odd. Because in the past, Marvel would print one, then DC would print one. But DC is printing both of them. In the DC versus Marvel, this is all of the crossovers up to JLA Avengers, except for the two amalgam runs, which is in the other omnibus. Now, we've talked in the past, there are some books that aren't going to be in the omnibus because they were written by somebody.
Pervy.
Well, written by someone who was arrested for child porn. But you can find them really cheap on the complete thing. But this is what we talked about a few months ago. It's everything. It's all of them. The DC versus Marvel, 904 pages. The Amalgam Age, 1,120 pages. Oof. These are big boys.
Big boys.
Also, the Amalgam Age actually has DC versus Marvel 1 through 4. You would think DC versus Marvel would be in the DC versus Marvel omnibus. No, it's not.
Yeah. Go figure. I'm trying to figure out who actually published JLA Avengers. If it was, because it was always one or the other, and I can't quite find.
It went back and forth. DC published one, Marvel published one. DC published one, Marvel published.
Yeah, but there was only one. Well, it was an absolute, so that had to have been DC.
Yep, DC published the absolute, Marvel published the paperback.
Yeah. So.
So that was the deal they had back in 2004. So again, I imagine that's going to be reprinted soon.
Yeah, hopefully. I don't care. I've got the Absolute, so I'm happy with that.
Same here. But I remember when they reprinted it for a special, this is coming out because George Perez is passing.
Mm-hmm.
People were, oh my gosh, we need to have this. And I imagine that's why we're getting this omnibus, and then we're going to get a collection of that later on.
I had a chance. I've actually had several copies of the trade paperback, and eventually I just blow them out on the eBays. Never got the Perez. I call it the Perez edition, where it was to kind of honor him. I did have an option to get it a few times, but the comic shop that I was going to go through, Granite City, he's like, you have it, but, knowing my propensity to flip things on eBay, he's like, I have other good customers I want, and I said, let them have it. I mean, I'll get it. I'll be happy with it. I'll read it, and then I'll flip, because, like I said, I've got the Absolute. Other than some of the, you can't quite spread the trade open wide enough to see the detail art in the middle when they do splash panels.
Yeah.
I'm happy with it. Plus, it's got Kurt Busiek's notes on everybody on every page, and that issue 4 is nuts. On the next page, I'm not going to pre-order this, but DC Pride 2024 number 1 is out. And across from it is DC Pride Celebration of Rachel Polchak.
Pollock,
thank you. God, I may have to pause and get my glasses if I keep doing this. And then DC Pride Uncovered, done by Various. Now, the reason why I say I'm not going to pre-order this is because I tend to go to a store, and if I see that store has it, I will order it. I will just buy it off the shelf. It's a $10 book, and that's my way of supporting not only DC Pride, but also shops that order this book. And the other two, like I said, are out of print work. That's the Rachel one. And then the other one is the best covers from All-Star Artists. And, of course, lots of different variant covers. Which variant cover, assuming all are equal, would you go for there, Corey? Or would you just go for that foil one?
If the Jen Pardell cover is a foil cover, I would pick that up on the Uncovered. And for the DC Pride, let's see, foil variant. Oh, I'd buy the foil variant even if it wasn't foil, because it's Babs Tarr. Babs Tarr's art is amazing. I love that art.
And it's right. You get everything there. See that, Marvel? You can put all the variant covers there and anybody else. Of course, if you go to the next page, you'll see pretty much the DC Pride 2024 variant covers, and you can choose accordingly. Actually, I said that wrong. These are variant covers that go with different books. So it's all themed books if you want to continue buying it throughout all the other DC things. So they got a nice little setup there.
Remember, we don't go over the stuff we normally buy. We tend to focus on the special stuff or the first issues or stuff like that. So for me, the first issue of Zatanna, Bring Down the House, on page 30.
Way up in page 30.
Again, buying it as a trade, but I want to point it out because love Zatanna, and it's a Black Label book. So the whole, Black Label's going to go away. No, it's not. But love Zatanna. It's one of DC's most underused characters. So really looking forward to this one. This is Zatanna ends up in Las Vegas. Not that the ritzier spots on the strip haven't come calling, of course, but since a devastating instance of magic gone wrong that forever changes the course of her childhood, Zatanna would much rather live out her days as a top hat fishnet wearing sleight of hand stage act than bother with real magic. These days, she doesn't think much of the past at all. That is, until an interdimensional vortex cracks open during Zatanna's act, and a demonic creature crawls out. Well, that's one way to find out.
That happens with us on our podcast constantly.
I always edit that out, though, just so you know.
Oh, that's fine.
Joe, what's next on your list?
Next thing I'm going to go for will be on page 38, the Mad Magazine number 1 facsimile edition.
Damn right.
I probably have this in some form or another, but for $3.99, or I don't see a foil edition.
Blank cover edition.
Okay. Well, still, I would want the the regular one, because that thing, that slithering blob coming towards us, what is it? It's Melvin. Oh, love it.
One of my favorite comics. It's an EC comic. Mad as a comic was far better than Mad as a magazine. Just putting that out there.
No, I agree. It's consistently, the comic, I think, had more yucks in it. For the other one, you either like it or you don't. I never liked, like, snappy answers to stupid questions. Never liked.
But also with Mad as a comic book, by the fifth issue, they started playing with the format. They'd have fake ads. The stories would do other things. They'd invert the reality of the stories. And Kurtzman seemed to get bored with whatever he was doing really, really quick. So he'd just keep reinventing it. The first issue is not the best issue. I would say they didn't really get their feet under them till issue 5 with Wally Wood's Super Duper Man. So yes. Mad, the first issue, is just making fun of the other stuff EC did. They had a horror comic. They had a science fiction comic, et cetera, et cetera. They didn't get into parody until then, but it's still well worth picking up because, come on, you've got Harvey Kurtzman, Will Elder, Jack Davis, Wally Wood. Ah, it's so good. So good.
I would like also to see all the comics reprinted this way. Hear that, DC? Take money out of my wallet. Just do it.
Also, on the next page, they're still reprinting Crisis on Infinite Earths. Yeah. This one's got a foil cover as well.
I decided not to do this, but I will, with issue 7, be probably picking up 7 copies of the blank sketch cover. Because, you know, I like to have Supergirl art done for me, and I'm running low on blank covers.
By the way, Joe, did you get the Batman tabloid reprint that came out about two, 3 weeks ago?
Nope, should be in my box, which did you get the foil cover? Shipping it? I don't recall.
I got the foil cover, and oh my God. Oh my God. Neil Adams foil cover. They changed the framing on it a little bit to actually make it look better.
I will tell you, I never saw a foil cover out in the wild. I did see the book. So if you got a foil cover, I think you got something special because I did not see any at the normal shops I haunt on New Comic Book Day. So get that. I've got is it treasury size or is it smaller?
Oh, it's treasury size.
Because I've got a cardboard bag if you need it, Corey. Keep that sucker safe.
Just remind me whenever we get regular comics.
Yeah. Now we can barrel into the collected editions. And there's a couple. Again, this is a tough month, so a lot of these are put right away for me on page 44. Nightwing Year One 20th Anniversary Deluxe Edition. And it's the acclaimed writers from Batgirl Year One, Robin Year One. They reunite with Nightwing Year One. Spencer Scott McDaniel, written by Scott Beatty, Chuck Dixon. I've loved Year Ones. They're just fantastic read. They sit outside of normal continuity, and it's your chance to read it. Because like I said, it's been 20 years. I don't even know if I have. I probably wouldn't even remember it if I did read it. Underneath is 100 Bullets Deluxe Edition, which I have the hardcovers. But
this is the story that came after 100 Bullets. This was a spinoff miniseries.
And I'm going to, I'm torn again. It's an expensive month. So I don't know if I want to pick this up now or do like I did with 100 Bullets, pick it up later. Because I've got the other ones in hardcover. So it would be nice just to keep the hardcovers going.
On page 45, Robin, the Tim Drake Compendium.
Another one. I really want.
Which is, the compendiums are like omnibuses, except they're in paperback. This is reprints all of the early appearances of Tim Drake, then the Robin miniseries, and then going into, they do get the first 5 issues of Robin, but it's all the miniseries and tie-ins and other appearances leading up to him getting his own series. I always thought that was weird that they did 3 miniseries before they decided to do a regular series.
I don't think so, because it sold really well. I remember, because they had to remember the gimmick where The first issue had 5 covers, and then the second issue had 3 or 4 or whatever, and they were all bad. Yeah. They're in dollar bins all over the place. They're not like they're super expensive, but boy, when they first came out, people were nosebleeding for them. I think Joker's Wild, did that have the hologram cover?
Yes, that had the hologram cover.
So, and again, this is Compendium 1, so there'll probably be a second one.
Or more. And for me, that was it for DC.
Let's see, what else do I got? No, that, the only other thing I had listed on page 57, Swamp Thing by Nancy A. Collins Omnibus, 2024 edition.
The original version sold out like day of.
Yeah.
And I bought it, so.
I didn't because this occurred after the infamous sacking of, who was it, Bissett? No.
No, this was much later.
But what I'm saying is there was a whole era where the Swamp Thing just kind of, nobody cared until Nancy got on, and then all of a sudden, hey, this is getting good again.
Yeah, she came on. Rick Veitch was let go.
That's
a guy named Doug Reddy took over.
Again, no dissing on him, but you had a tough act to follow.
And not only was it a tough act to follow, after he left comics because of the people who were, basically they took out all their anger at DC on him. And he had been a part-time writer anyway. And after, he came on to Swamp Thing to wrap up Rick Veitch's story, which, there's an unenviable task. Mm-hmm. And then he just, when he was let go, he quit comics. Nancy Collins is a horror writer, best known for the Sunglasses After Dark series, has done comics, has done novels, just a great writer. And she was on the book for, let's see, from 110 to 139. Did 2 annuals. There was a Black Orchid crossover. And then, of course, with Vertigo Jam. This is a really good book. Really enjoyed her run on the book. It was not. She did it as horror, but a very different horror from Alan Moore and Rick Veitch.
Yeah. That's why I wanted. I don't think her books are expensive if you're a back issue guy, but I'm an old. But
that omnibus was.
Oh. So here's your chance to go
and went insane.
And again, this is I've already got 2 omnibuses ready to rock. And we haven't gotten to Marvel yet. Should we?
So let's go to Marvel.
All right. So first off, a lot of Marvel for me is tied into that Blood Hunt storyline, which sounds absolutely amazing. However, I'm not buying it because
it's all going to be collected in an Omni.
And if it ain't, I'm going to probably get onto Marvel Unlimited. So read it that way. So again, look through all of it. Again, I'm buying a lot. In any normal book I buy, I'm buying a lot of miniseries tied into it. I'm going all the way to page 24. X-Men number 35 or Legacy number 700. This is it. This is the end of an era. It is the end of the Krakoan era. Its time has come at last. The tragedy and triumph of Fall of the House of X, the madness and mystery of Rise of Powers X, they've all come to their end and led to this moment that will change the future of mutant kind for years to come. We've talked about it. We know it's coming. Written by an all-star cast of writers and artists, including a story by Chris Claremont. And, varying covers to satisfy everybody. I'm not even going to go through it, but you can just go right there, page 24, 25. That's the first thing I would recommend. If you haven't been following it, I don't know if you want to pick this one up because it is a $10 book. If you just going to jump on with the new stuff coming, and we're going to be jumping on that. So what do you got for us first up?
Well, on the next page is Scarlet Witch number 1. They are restarting this series. And of course, the reason they're restarting it is because 1, it was a really good series, and 2, nobody bought it.
Yeah.
And it sounds like they're going to blow up the situation they had done. I really liked the situation. What it was, Scarlet Witch had opened a shop and there was a door. And if someone needed help anywhere, if you open a door and you're desperately needing help only the Scarlet Witch can give, you would walk through and you would end up in her shop. Let's say, you know, I had a demon infesting my toilet and I go in to fight it. I open the bathroom door and step in. I would actually step into the Scarlet Witch's shop and she would help. It was a great setup, a really great idea. It didn't sell because, let's face it, you know, Scarlet Witch is not a character that's people are going to go and buy 100,000 copies of. But Marvel's got a lot of, they have a lot of faith in the story Steve Orlando's doing, so they're giving it another try after they did the Scarlet Witch Quicksilver miniseries. But the one on the next page is the one that just fascinates me.
Oh, I am awed. I am very, very excited about this.
Joe?
Uncle Scrooge and the Infinity Dime, number one. This is a Disney character being published by Marvel, who, unless you've been under a rock or don't really listen to the podcast and just keep us in background noise while you're busy doing stuff. Hello, Angel! This is the first time I think they've done Uncle Scrooge. I think it's the first time they've done, other than they've done Disney properties, but they haven't done Disney characters proper because they've always been licensed out to other places. I'm just going to read this because this is the first time ever Marvel and Disney team up to bring you the story of the century. Get it? They put a little scent. Never mind. It's a visual gag. This is the story you never expected. One of the greatest characters in the history of comics leaps into his most epic adventure yet in the manner only Marvel can deliver. When Uncle Scrooge's fabled money bin gets stolen by a shocking culprit, the world's toughest duck must undertake a quest unlike any other, alongside a surprising array of allies, other versions of himself. It's an oversized special from Marvel mainstay writer Jason Aaron. Come on, you already had me at Uncle Scrooge. Jason? And a cadre of celebrated Scrooge artists with tons of variant covers. I'm just going to read a few. Alex Ross, Frank Miller. Oh, my God. Peach Momoku, Ron Lim, John Romita Jr., Scotty Young. I'm not one to go nuts on variant covers, but I really, really want to just buy these. And fortunately, some of them are on the next couple pages, so you can choose which ones you would like. I mean, just looking, if I had to buy one.
Peach Momoku would be the one I'd get.
I kind of like
that. And then the other one, that's jumping out at me is the Steve McNiven.
I like Walter Simon. And yeah, these are, my guess is these are all Scrooges from what we'll call the multiverse. They're also representing the classic Christmas on Bear Mountain, the first appearance of Uncle Scrooge by the legendary Disney Comics creator Carl Barks. For $8, $7.99. This is going to be fun. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. Every time I say something's fun, nobody wants to buy it. That's okay. More for me. There's J. Scott Campbell's got a cover. Gabriel Delato.
The last of the Ultimate line is starting up on page 32. That is the Ultimates. I'll be honest. I don't know the creative team. I don't know anything they've ever done. It's Denise Camp, Juan Frigeri. It is 6 months ago, Tony Stark sent Peter Parker a radioactive spider and set him back on the course to being Spider-Man. Since then, Iron Lad, which is Tony Stark because his father was Iron Man, Captain America, Doom, Thor, and Sif have begun to do the same for other lost heroes, building a network of superpowered heroes hungry for change. Now they must band together to destroy the Maker's Council and restore freedom and free will to a world ruled from the shadows. I've loved the Ultimate books. I really have. I think Marvel has done a fantastic job relaunching the Ultimate line. Even though it doesn't have the same idea as the original Ultimate line, which was, hey, these are going to be introductory books for people who see the movies. And boy, they got away from that on everything but Spider-Man. This looks to be a whole world that Jonathan Hickman is kind of overseeing. And I've always loved Jonathan Hickman. His ideas are fantastic. You know, his stuff on the X-Men, that whole, the Krakoa saga, just blew my mind. And yes, it did go into other places. And from what I hear, the ending that he had in mind is not the ending they're using. But for him to do this Ultimate Universe and kind of overseeing it, so far, I've really liked everything they've done. Joe, what's next for you?
This one I'm on the fence on. On page 37, Thanos Annual Number 1. I love me Thanos. And this is the beginning of the annual event of 2024. I'll come back to that in a second. Because after the event of his series, Thanos goes off to find the Infinity Stones. He's in for a shock when he discovers that the Infinity Stones have been incorporated into actual people, like Star, Quantum, Overtime, Prince of Power, and Multitude. But wait, there are 6 Infinity Gems, but only 5 people listed. And they give you the don't want to miss this Marvel Universe-shaking saga. Now, again, this is the beginning of the annuals, which means there's going to be more on them. It'll probably be a book, a graphic novel later on. So, again, I may pick up the Thanos Annual 1 because I pretty much pick up anything that's got Thanos in it. I may back out of the other annuals. I also am wondering if Thanos might be suffering from overuse, but we'll see what happens. So I'm cautiously excited about this one. What do you got next for us?
The next thing for me is on page 47.
Oh,
they are reprinting the first issue of Godzilla. Now, normally I would go, I'm buying it as an omnibus. I don't need a foil cover.
Foil cover.
The foil covers are getting me. After 30 years, I'm finally buying a foil
cover. Foil.
Gold. It's gold.
That's going to look sweet. Herb Trimpe's art as a foil cover will look sweet. That's one, again, unless I really got to cut costs, because, again, we're not even in – we're just in Marvel, and I'm already blowing money. Speaking of which, the other facsimiles are on the opposite page, Amazing Spider-Man 257, and down below they're continuing to roll through Marvel superheroes at issue number 6 with variant cover available. I'm assuming a foil. I don't see it listed.
Retailer customers, please inquire regarding foil pricing.
Which probably means that retailers are pricing it however they can get, whatever they can get away with. So
pretty much
sneaky bastards. If you're a fan of role-playing games, I'm just going to point out on page 45, it's the Deadpool Role Plays the Marvel Universe game on sale in July. But if you're interested, check it out. It's the first comic size one-shot adventure for Marvel Multiverse role-playing game, and it's going to be here. Play as Deadpool and his team or use your own characters in a fourth-wall-breaking adventure right out of Marvel Comics, including a comic story led by Cullen Bunn, who did the Deadpool Kills of the Marvel Universe. This is a role-playing game adventure and new character profiles. It's $10, 48 pages. I'm intrigued by it. I don't know. Does this mean you need to play with other people, or is it like you just play along with yourself?
No, it's like Dungeons and Dragons. You really need other people.
I just like the idea that it's comic size. You've taught me not to. No, I just like the idea that it's comic size. So that I found intriguing.
On page 67, another of the giant size books, Giant Size Daredevil. This one is actually by the creative team working on Daredevil, so it will tie into the current Daredevil story, and it does have Kingpin. The reprint in the back is Daredevil number 170 by Frank Miller. Kingpin Must Die, where he brought Kingpin back because Marvel had pretty much sort of written Kingpin out of the comics. His wife had said, I will leave you if you continue to be in charge of, you know, if you continue to be a crime boss. And it was okay. My love for you outweighs everything else. Well, that lasted a couple of years.
Well, to be fair, they did kill off his wife, sort of.
Maybe much kind of later. Much later.
It was interesting, though, the way they brought him back in Daredevil. So was
they made him, Frank Miller was fantastic at making Kingpin a threat, because Kingpin had pretty much become a big fat guy over the years. And Frank Miller brought him back in a way that made him a threat. And it's the way everyone has portrayed Kingpin ever since. And it was amazing for me, because I'd only read the Kingpin, you know, the Kingpin story in Spider-Man, where it was basically a two-parter where Spider-Man made fun of how big he was, and he would, like, throw desks at Spider-Man.
Yeah, that last he had become
kind of a nothing character.
But that last battle they had in Amazing Spider-Man was amazing, because they went an entire page without word balloons. They were just slugging it out. And you often got to wonder, because in Superior Spider-Man, they said that Spider-Man always held back. And you wonder if Kingpin realized that, or if he just was that damn tough and was able to hold his own. But he did hold his own, and he almost won had not the clock run out. So the next thing for me is in the Star Wars universe, page 66, just to point it out, and I'll probably muff the name. Sorry, Turbo. Star Wars. Ahsoka. I think I got that right. It's a number one issue with everyone's favorite Jedi there. So always pick up the number ones, because you never know if they're going to be valuable or not. A couple different variants to go from, including the Phantom Menace 25th anniversary variant cover, which I'll predict is the one everybody's going to underorder. Or if you go to the next page or so, you can see some of the different variant covers. And again, kudos to Marvel for doing that. If you're going to want me to buy these things, you got to tease me with it. Oh, Corey, check it out. Foil cover. And look at the pose that Ken Lashley has her. And you, oh, that as a foil cover. Oh. You know what they really need to do? They need to do some Star Wars holiday special variant cover.
An adaptation of the holiday special.
No, just the variant cover.
The first 20 pages are just especially.
Never mind. Okay. Now I'm going to sit back and let Corey will tell us when Marvel is going to break our budget on this month, and I will interject when it's something I'm going to buy.
Corey. Page 76.
Woohoo!
Ghost Rider 2099 Omnibus. Now, when this came out, I got on the book late because, one, I was sick of Ghost Rider, and two, I only liked the Spider-Man 2099, and that was because Peter David was writing it. A lot of the other 2099 books were meh. Len Kaminsky and Chris Bachalo, though, did a really cool job on this book. You also had Peter Gross, Mark Buckingham, Kyle Holtz, Graham Higgins, and Ashley Wood. Yes, the Ashley Wood who went on to draw the X-Files. Ghost Rider 2099 was a dark cyberpunk take on Marvel's Biker from Beyond the Grave. When the consciousness of Zero Cochrane, a murdered computer hacker, is downloaded into the body of a cybernetic warrior, sparks fly. Cochrane's killers become his first targets for vengeance, but getting his revenge won't be easy as Ghost Rider finds himself under the power of the mysterious inhabitants of the Ghost Works, a digital AI realm with its own set of rules. This was a really cool series. It was ahead of its time. I have not read it since it came out, so I wonder how well it's aged with its... Basically, it was trying to be science fiction in that, okay, we're going to have AI, we're going to have cyber, we're going to have this. And it pulled a lot from the current cyberpunk stuff that was being written at the time. But I remember I loved this book. It was far better than it had any right to be, to the point where Larry Stark, who didn't read a lot of comics at the time and is mostly known for back in the 50s, he wrote these long letters to EC. He was called EC's number one fan. He's the one who told me, you need to read this. This is really good. And I'm like, Larry Stark reading a superhero comic? He hates superhero comics. On the next page,
ROM.
The final ROM omnibus. This is issues 51 through 75, annual 3 and 4, the Incredible Hulk tie-in. This wraps up the run of ROM, And it has, I would say, the last, 12 to 20 issues are drawn by Steve Ditko. And here's the thing about it. All these people were lining up to ink Ditko because they were like, okay, this is probably the last time I'm going to get a chance to work on Ditko's pencils. So your inkers are people like P. Craig Russell, Bill Sienkiewicz, Aiken and Garvey. The P. Craig Russell inked issues are utterly beautiful. It is the best Ditko's art ever looked, especially with P. Craig Russell doing the coloring as well as the inking. The stories are, you know, basically Bill Mantlo wrote the entire series and he wrote it to a conclusion. But this is really, really good stuff. And let's see, you've got to, if I'm going to pick what cover, it's very easy. Yes, right. I love P. Craig Russell. I do. And that's the main cover. But man, I love Bill Sienkiewicz.
Yep, that's the one I'm going for.
Then we have a couple of reprints. We have a reprint of Punisher Max by Aaron and Dylan. This actually wraps up the Punisher Max story. If you think that the most recent story that Jason Aaron did, where he ended Frank Castle's story, no, he's done it before. And he did it in the Max line, and it was fantastic. It's also drawn by Steve Dillon, who drew the most of the Garth Ennis Punisher run at Max. This is just a fantastic, fantastic book. And I think it was in the shadow of the Garth Ennis run because Garth Ennis's run was so good. But Jason Aaron's run is just as good. And it sets up the end of the Punisher in just a brilliant, brilliant way. The other reprint is Uncanny X-Men Omnibus Volume 2. This is the Death of the Phoenix story, leading up to the introduction of Kitty Pryde as a member of the X-Men, leading X-Men 150. If you read the first two omnibuses of Uncanny X-Men, you've got their golden age. I would say that the third omnibus, up until Paul Smith left the book, when Paul Smith left the book, I think the golden age was over. It then kind of changed in a lot of ways. I did not like it as much. But this was a book where, when it came out, I could not wait the three to four weeks for the next issue.
There was only one X-Men title,
Which
is probably foreign to you kids out there. And that's probably why I stuck with X-Men probably longer than I should have.
I think most of us did.
Yeah, because it was it. That was it. That was just X-Men. But I have it. I don't have the Punisher thing above. I want it, but I can't afford it. Consequently, the next one, tell them about it, Strode.
You could not force me to buy this omnibus at gunpoint. Omnibus Dazzler does have an art term cover.
Yeah, yeah. So they're trying. I would go with the Larkin cover if I was prone to do it.
I will point out, when you look at all the pencilers, you know, penciled by blah, 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 blah. You've got John Romita, Don Perlin, Paul Chadwick with John Byrne, Keith Pollard, Mark Bright, Joff Isherwood, Tom Morgan, Al Milgram, and Colleen Duran. You know what they leave out? Vince Coletta inked most of this.
All right, on to the next page.
Recently, when this was announced, Mike Carlin, who was an editor at Marvel, and when he got fired, went over to DC and became the Superman editor. This was one of the books he edited, and he talked about how he was given the book and told, you've got to save this book. So we brought on Archie Goodwin, Paul Chadwick, who went on to do Concrete. And he said the book was fantastic, but no matter what I could do, I could not get people to read it. And I actually sent him an email saying, Jim Shooter with Dazzler the movie burned this character for me because they had built it up as this is going to be this big thing. You know, we're going to be revamping. This Dazzler the movie story is going to change the Marvel universe and completely change the way mutants are seen in the Marvel universe. And I picked it up, and it's a boring romance story. And what was the big change? People found out Dazzler was a mutant. And I said, I have since gone back and picked them up. You're right, they were really good. But you were given an impossible mission because the book had burned so many people. I mean, they had Galactus show up. Dazzler became the herald of Galactus and then performed a concert for him that made him cry.
I wonder if that's what they got from the Star Wars Holiday Special.
But, oh, I know there are people who want to pick this up. And, you know, God bless you. You completists are better people than me. I just remember every time I picked it up, it was boring. It was ugly. The stories just made you want to pound nails with your forehead. The Galactus story is the dumbest Galactus story ever printed anywhere.
The sad thing is when Dazzler 1 came out, we were so excited for it because it was a painted cover. It had all these guys in it, and it was only sold to direct market.
It was the first direct-only Marvel comic. And
we were buying it like platinum on a Star Trek Deep Space Nine episode. It was just amazing. I'm going to go dig out my essentials, and I'll try reading it over the next couple weeks. And like I said, I read Savage She-Hulk, and I wish I hadn't. So I'll give it a try. But yeah, I'm sorry, Artur. Sorry, Larkin. I can't buy this.
Ready for the weird box? Now it does have the Beauty and the Beast miniseries, which has the weirdest history.
All right.
What it was supposed to be, they end Dazzler and the Defenders, kind of bringing the Beast and Dazzler together. And then they have a mini series of them teaming up that was supposed to lead into X-Factor number one. She was the mystery character. But then John Byrne took Kurt Busiek's idea to bring back Jean Grey. And we have since found out that the reason John Byrne did that was to fuck over Chris Claremont. Because Claremont had done all these stories getting Cyclops past Jean Grey. And Byrne knew that if he did this, it would fuck up all of Claremont's plans leading to issue 200 of the X-Men. The more I learn about how John Byrne conducted himself in comics, the less I like him. Recently, Tom Brevoort, who was the editor on Byrne's Hulk, dropped a story. He didn't mention Byrne's name, but if you read it, it's like, oh yeah, that's John Byrne. Byrne was the writer on The Hulk with Ron Garvey as the artist. And he was the editor. And remember that Hulk chapter, Hulk year one or chapter one or whatever they did?
Yeah.
The book was mostly done. And when Brevoort looked at it, it's like, oh, this fucks up continuity really bad. And he goes to the editor-in-chief and says that. And the editor says, look, it's mostly done. We can't get him to change it at this point or it will be late. So what you can do, we're going to be writing Spider-Man Chapter 1 out of continuity. Put the Chapter 1 label on it. And we can sort of say, okay, it's part of the Chapter 1 thing. And we'll never refer to it again. Well, what Byrne saw is, he had done all this stuff to kind of poke the bear. And when Brevoort didn't make him change it, he's like, oh, he's a pushover. I can do whatever I want. So they're building to this crossover. And Ron Garney calls Brevoort and says, we need to talk about credits and pay. Oh, why do we need to do that? Because the script Byrne sent me has like 5 pages. And then for the next 10 pages, he just says, fight scene, and then wraps the story. And Brevoort says he hasn't sent me that script to be approved yet. So don't work on it. I'll give him a call. We'll see what's going on. Because the writer on the other book, Wolverine, needed to know the setup. And Byrne had 2 machines. One machine would go off if he were gone. And this was back in the days of answering machines. Byrne had one answering machine that would go off when he wasn't home. There was another one where he had taken the phone off the hook and was screening his calls. And if you called, you didn't know unless you'd called him a few times, and then you knew the difference because, one, he would basically, the messages were very similar, but if you'd called him a few times, you could tell the difference. Because it would be, you know, if you called and he picked up, it's like, oh, that message, that his outgoing message was different. So Brevoort called, got the message that Byrne was screening his call, and said, hey, you need to give me a call. I haven't got the script yet. Ron Garney let me know that he's not happy with some of the script stuff. Looks like you're having him do a lot of the writing in the middle of the book. We need to go over this. And I need to get it over to Eric Larson, who's writing Wolverine. He needs that script so he knows where to pick up and what to follow up on. And Byrne didn't call him back, and Byrne didn't call him back, and Byrne didn't call him back. And finally, he again goes to the editor-in-chief and says, look, John's not calling me back. By the way, the editor-in-chief, Joe Quesada. Byrne's not calling me back. I've sent him emails. I've called him. His deadline for the final script was 2 weeks ago. And Quesada says, give him a call, and if he doesn't pick up, fire him. Now, Brevoort says he hates firing people via message or email. He wants to talk to them in person. You know, basically wants to look them in the eye and be a man about it. But he called, got the answering machine. John, you've got to give me a call by the end of the day. Called again. John, please call me by the end of the day. This is important. End of the business day, Byrne hadn't called him. And it was the, you know, the screening message. He said, basically fired him over the phone. That's why Eric Larson wrote that issue of the Hulk. And Byrne has since said, they were cowards. They fired me without telling me. Yeah, da 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 da. And Brevoort said no. And it's all documented in Marvel's, you know, because they had to write. This was back when it was long distance phone calls. You had to write down every long distance phone call because, okay, we have to, you know, for expense reports. Stories like that. And stories like, hey, you know, if we bring back Jean Grey, this will really fuck Claremont. Byrne may have been a great artist at one point, but man, how there's a reason why nobody wanted to work with him after a certain point. Because when you don't move the needle sales-wise, you can't continue to be a jerk. And when you go up the ladder, stepping on people's heads, as you come down the ladder, they will remember. And that's why they always say, you know, comics is a small universe. If you're a jerk or you're a gut person who blows deadlines or you're a person who screws over other talent, you better hope that your sales figures never drop, because once they do, you're going to be working on lab rats at DC with no promotion. There, that was story time. On the next page. We've got Marvel Masterworks, or Tomb of Dracula Volume 4, and I didn't realize there had not done a Marvel Masterworks a Man Thing. So now, would I buy this? Hell no, I've got the omnibus. But still, you know, the Marvel Masterworks is a line that continues to sell. There are enough collectors. Doesn't really matter what it is. The Marvel Masterworks sell around 1,200 copies. They go up for bigger books, they go down for others, but the baseline is 1,200 people out there buy each Marvel Masterwork. Then on the next page is a new X-Men omnibus. This is the Extinction Agenda, which was one of the early crossovers. So I think with this, all of the big X-Men crossovers are now in omnibus form.
I'm always tempted to buy this, but I think I have it in trade. Oh well. You see the dilemmas I've got to go through?
Yes. What a horrible, horrible life you have.
And even on the next page, I bought the regular issues. Do I want to buy the hardcover or softcover? Trade paperback. I'm talking, of course, about Marvel Gods. Jonathan Hickman, Valero.
Shitty.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's what I'm reading here. We're doesn't matter. So again, if you haven't been on board, I think this will read like everything Hickman does much better as a graphic novel than individual issues. But I've been picking him up individual. So.
And for the people who say it was canceled early, nope, this was the story Hickman wanted to tell.
Yeah.
Now, there are a couple of books that are not epics, but they might as well be. And that is on page, flipping through here.
Ooh, there's a whole... flipping us off.
On page 96, Shang-Chi by Jean Lin Yang. 560 pages. That's an epic collection. They're just not calling it an epic collection because with the epic collection, there is a promise that it will remain in print. And if it goes out of print, they will reprint it. Then under that is The Eternals by Kieran Gillen. This is the Eternals series that led into the X-Men versus the Eternals story. We also get, and I'm a little irritated by this one, the Marvel Age Treasury Edition. It collects Marvel Age 1000 and Amazing Fantasy 1000. Why does it irritate me? Because it doesn't have the, what is it, Marvel Comics 1000 and Marvel Comics 1001. Mm-hmm. Put them all in one book.
Yeah. As for the omnibus, I will recommend across that page on 98, Savage Avengers by Gary Duggan. Why?
Yes.
Well, because first of all, it's a kick-ass story. And second of all, unless... they've made some other arrangements.
They have an agreement. They have an agreement because this is after Conan has gone over to Titan.
I'm not talking about this. I'm talking about reprinting it.
Yeah.
So if you're talking about, I've said this before, anytime you get a cross-licensed property and it's published, if you're the type that want to, first, if you want to read a good story, pick it up. Second, there ain't going to be another printing. So... again, you buy it, even if you bought the comic, it's a little expensive. It's $44.99, 392 pages. And then just sit on it. And we'll revisit it in 5-6 years and see if it did indeed go up. Because generally, anything that goes out of print tends to have a pretty decent aftermarket value. Case in point, the only other one trade I'm buying is on page 100.
Yes.
Dracula trade paperback.
This has another cool story behind it, Joe.
Story time. We'll get to Roy the rest Thomas. Of the previews, we promise.
Roy Thomas and Dick Giordano started doing an adaptation of the Dracula novel in the Marvel Black and White comics, but the Marvel Black and White comics were canceled before they got it done. Then in 2005, Roy was doing... adaptations of classic novels for a Marvel Classics line, which was weird. But they said, hey, would you and Dick Giordano want to finish this adaptation? So they reprinted, reprinted the early stuff and then finished it up in regular comics. This is a reprinting of that. Dick Giordano's art is beautiful in this. I am going to say this, though. The original Dracula novel is pretty bad. So other than the art, this is not great. The art is beautiful. Roy does a really good job of adapting a really dull novel. The epic line. We got the Deadpool and Cable series. Then Incredible Hulk, Kill or Be Killed, which is number 9, which reprints a lot of the Roger Stern stuff. With, let's see, Hulk 277 through 244. On page 103 is a She-Hulk epic collection, which is volume 6, which is, you know, weird that... but this is John Byrne's second run on the book, which is, let's see, She-Hulk 51 through 60, and then the stories in Doc Samson that team up with Incredible Hulk, Hulk and She-Hulk Long Night, and the serial that they did in Marvel Comics Presents. But the big one is on page 104, Star Wars Modern Era Epic Collection, Skywalker Strikes, Volume 1 in the Star Wars Modern Epic Collection. We were doing podcasts when this first issue came out and sold 1 million copies. This is when Marvel got Star Wars back. Jason Aaron and Karen Gillan took over. John Cassaday, Simon Bianchi, Stuart Immonen, Mike Diodato Jr., Salvador La Roca. This is the first 15 issues and the 3 issues that cross over with the Darth Vader comic that was coming out at the time. The other epic collections that are in here are reprints, and that is Marvel.
Woohoo! All right, folks, grab your previews, put it right down, and let's just jump right in, because the first ones we're going to cover will be Boom! I will start with Corey. Is there anything from Boom you are going to buy?
I believe there is. Let me open the book here.
All right.
Ooh, I'm going to be hunting for that dupe. Lawful number one.
Yes.
Buying it as a trade paperback.
Yes.
The magical meets the modern in a walled city of surreality, surreally familiar architecture, where two small children with a sense of adventure get a grim reminder of reality. Because every mistake one makes in this world will cause them to transform into a monster bit by bit. In the eyes of society, there's no distinction between the rules and what's right. It's written by Greg Pak. We've got examples of the art on pages 54 and 55. I like this idea. I really like this idea.
I'm going to pop you back a couple pages on page 48, Profane. Five-issue miniseries written by Peter Mulligan, Raul Fernandez doing the illustration. Solving murders in Los Angeles is the daily bread of private detective Will Profane. But something is strange about the latest case. When every clue points towards a famous detective novelist at the center of this mystery, Will's world will transform into something truly unreal. Again, five issues. I will probably pick this up as a book. Couple things I will point out, if you're a fan of Keanu Reeves' Berserker, new series is starting up, written by Jason Aaron. Francesco Mana is writing it. It's on page 56. If you need a box to put it all in, there is a Berserker short comic box there on page 59. On page 69.
69? Nice.
Yeah. Slow burn, baby. This is a soft cover of a series we recommended when it first came out. Fleeing the botched robbery in New York City, a junkie, her dying partner, and a dementia-ridden old man pull into a coal mining ghost town in central Pennsylvania. Obscured by the caustic mist spewed forth by the coal seam fire from the 1960s, which is still burning, Traeger is the first perfect place to lay low, score a fix, and take a hostage. Or is it? Because as they realize the origin of the town fire, along with the guilt, fear, and penance tied to the past, and those who stayed in Trier, they will discover a horrific truth while on the run from death. Again, one of those I recommended. Here's the trade. As far as other properties, if you're a Firefly fan, on page 79, there's your hardcover, Firefly the Fall Guys. And this is an advanced solicit because it's not coming out till August. But if you got a Firefly fan in your life, or you're one, you want to check it out. Across from it, there's Dune, soft cover, volume one. And the last one I'm going to point out, because this one actually tickles me a bit, Rocco's Modern Life and Afterlife soft cover. Rocco's Modern Life was a Nickelodeon series, one of those that back when we had the shop, which would come in with a videotape, dudes, you got to watch this. This is amazing. He just had a knack of finding this stuff. This collects, I think, Rocco's Modern Life 1 through 8 and Modern Afterlife 1 through 4. I don't know if this is the original Marvel stuff.
No, this is all new. Oh. This is the one that they printed.
Okay, so yeah, there you go. So just point that out because, again, there's a lot in this month's previews. Next up. Dynamite. You got anything from the Dynamites?
Nothing new.
All right. I'll point out, just if you're a Vampirella fan, on page 89, Vampirella Dark Reflection. And I know none of you are going to buy the Atlas signed edition cover K, because you know I'm going to. Got next couple pages, you got some artwork. You got interview with the creators, which I always appreciate. On page 98, speaking of Disney characters, Lilo and Stitch, number 626, original graphic novel. It's 100 pages of Blue Furred Bliss, a graphic novel size that's 6 by 9 inches. So if you're a Lilo and Stitch fan and you're looking for some original graphic, I don't know where they got the number 626. But hopefully, oh, wait, arriving in stores on 6/26. Get it? And it's 6 by 9. Okay, I got it. So I just wanted to point that out. In the next page, you got some of the collections that Dynamite has done, as well as the regular comic following that. On page 111, there you've got some bonus. They're doing this a lot. They're showing bonus covers that were originally available only at Dynamite.com, and here's your chance to get them now. A lot of them are collector exclusive covers, but here you've got three, a really cool cover from Thundercats that Jay Lee did. Next to it, you can order the Jay Lee signed edition. And if you're nuts like me, you're probably going after the Thundercats Jay Lee signed and remarked edition. So again, I don't know if I'll be able to get that through my normal guy, but I got a couple contacts that are willing to do that. On page 118, your chance to get Vampirella tarot cards again. Every time I ordered these for the charity booth that Corey and I ran for a while, people would buy them like crazy. It's like they never even realized they were there. And again, I don't know, maybe it was just my comic store, but I loved selling stuff like this. And I sold the snot out of it, but nobody has them in town. Makes me want to almost open a comic shop. And if you don't have enough trade paperback goodness on page 126, 127, Elvira Volume 1, Elvira meets Vincent Price, Dark Shadows Vampirella, one I bought years ago. I don't know if we were recording back. No, I think we were. That was when I was working in Dulles for the longest time. And I happened to go by Laughing Ogre, and they had this as a pack, and I picked it up and read it. Across from it, Dawn Vampirella. Above it, Vampirella versus Dracula. All sorts of Vampirella goodness. Your channel, if you get it, whatever. Check it out. Fill in your gaps. I see that a lot more as we were going through. A lot of people are, publishers, are re-listing their trades. So, again, if you got something and your local comic store doesn't have it, let them know. They can probably get it for you. Now, on to Titan Comics. You got anything from Titan?
Joe, go to page 147. I have been talking about the Mad paperback for the last few months.
I don't want Vince Garibaldi pissed at me, so I'm going to quit.
When I would read the Mad paperbacks, there were also Charlie Brown Peanuts paperbacks, and they seemed to be ubiquitous. Everybody had them, and loved them. And what it was, they would put a strip on each page, and then the Sundays would kind of be cut up to be on two pages. But I read Peanuts in the newspaper at my grandparents' house. My parents didn't buy the newspaper because they didn't have time to read it, so you know, why spend the money? But the Peanuts books, it seemed like they were everywhere. And they are reprinting the originals. This is Here's to You, Charlie Brown, which came out in 1962.
I have the – I don't have all of it. I was buying the Fangraphic reprints, and then
yes.
I didn't get them all. So the later editions I'm missing. But these are fun. I have bittersweet memories of them because I owned a lot of these original ones, and – when they got tossed in the garage, they all got infested by mice. Unfortunately, what had happened is I got these from my grandma. I'd go to sleep overnight at her house. She'd buy me a TV dinner, buy me a Peanuts book, and that's how I spent the night. I'm going to bounce you back to page 130. There's the Doctor Who, the 15th Doctor number one, first comic book appearance. Take that as what it's worth. Might go up, might not go down. We don't know. The one I am torn, other than the photo cover, which is always cool, but doesn't have the Doctor. There's an art germ variant where he's the Doctor and his new companion there. And then there's the cover logo. Oh, those are so cool. I don't know which one I'm getting, but so there's your first appearance. Next page, every single volume, so you can catch up all things Doctor Who at Titan Comics. That's it for Titan. What's next?
Looks like what's next is Image.
Image. All right. Let's see what we got here. I got to give kudos to Image. Their number ones are right up front. So if you just want to look at what they're offering, page 159 to 161 has all their number ones. After that, they've got new collections. So you, again, a lot of things we go, oh, we'll wait till we pick up the graphic novel. Well, there they are. So very easy readout to do. The first one I'm looking at, as long as we're on page 159, actually both of them I'm going to recommend. Rifters number one. It's a series premiere. Please, saran wrap your ass, because you're about to projectile shit yourself right into the wild world of Rifters, where Time Cop collides with law and orders, filtered through the stupid McSmart-a-lot Einstein lens of Mr. Show. Fenton and Geller are a couple of part-time Weisenheimers, full-time vice cops who suck at rule. Well, suck at rule following, but excel at busting time travel crimes. Okay, you had me at time travel. Unfortunately, their daily grind involves tedious police work, like chasing down douchebag influencer hell-bent on live-streaming illegal transtemporal trips to 1920 Chicago to steal primal bootleg hooch. However, in a twist of fate, our heroes find themselves thrust into the heart of an inter-time serial homicide mystery, but not before things change, forcing our pair into the crosshairs of potentially lethal consequences. The stakes are high, time is of the essence, and Fenton and Geller are about to discover that playing with time's stream isn't all flappers and jazz hands. Underneath it, another series premiere, Falling in Love on the Path to Hell. Gary Duggan and Gary Brown present a massive double-length first issue of their groundbreaking new series. The sun set on samurai and gunslingers at roughly the same time, but our two leads didn't die off quietly. In the east, Azumi and Onimusha warrior and female samurai would rather die with their weapons than surrender them to a sword hunt. In the west, gunslinger McGraith follows his revenge to the bitter end and pays the ultimate price. The future lovers are mortally wounded in a world apart and awaken together in a purgatory ruled by a ruthless society of damned warriors. This one has it all. Action, the dead, the dying, the undead, and of course, romance. What do you got next for Image?
Well, what I have for Image is in the trade paperbacks, actually. It is an original, Houses of the Unholy. Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips, an FBI agent from the cult crime beat, and a woman with a past linked to the Satanic Panic are drawn into a terrifying hunt for an insane killer hiding in the shadows of the underworld. It's Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. I'm going to buy it.
Let's see. A couple I'm going to point out in the number one. Still on page 160, if you're into the G.I. Joe universe, the whole, I don't know, what are we calling it? The Hickman universe? No, not Hickman.
Hasbro.
Hasbro universe. Again, it's all tying together. Destro, Scarlet. If you know who they are, great. If you don't, you probably weren't a G.I. Joe fan. Underneath it is Misery, which ties into the Spawn universe. And basically, it's the daughter of Wanda Fitzgerald, the former wife of Al Simmons. As the daughter of Wanda Fitzgerald, the former wife of Al Simmons, a.k.a. Spawn, Wanda has been endowed with incredible abilities that keep her a cut off from those around her. Her journey into the darkness starts here. Four-issue series tied into the Spawnverse, I guess, for lack of a better word. And then on page 161, let's see, what do we got here? Plastic Death and Dolls. It's a miniseries, 5 issues. Everyone's favorite serial killer has returned. Learn how Edwin came to his first kill at 10 years old and how that set him on a blood-soaked path of decapitations, sporks, and dolls on his way to finding the true life, the true love of his life, a sex doll named Virginia. Remote Space is another miniseries. The year is 2450. The Earth is dying. Human species has gone down to 2 different evolutionary paths. One used cybernetic augmentation to adapt to space travel. The humans left behind used genetic manipulation to adapt to Earth's worsening climate. For Earth to survive, these civilizations need to collide. 4 issues. And to round it out, Self-Help, another miniseries. Down on his luck, rideshare driver Jerry Hauser's existence is a bleak one, especially because every fairy he picks up tells him how much he looks like uber-successful self-help guru Darren Hart. But after a twist of fate, Jerry's given the chance of a lifetime, which, if he's not careful, may well end his lifetime. So begins this California noir, rocking, gleefully lured pulp crime story for our time. Pick him up as comics, pick him up as miniseries. Look, right below, there's more G.I. Joe, Cobra Commander trade, Volume 1, Duke, Volume 1. Anything else from our good buddies at Image?
Not for me, no.
All right. What do we got next? Who do we got next?
And now it's the...
Deluxe.
Yes. Want to tell everybody, everything in Afterblaze is stuff they have in their warehouse.
Aftershock. Oh,
that's right.
No, Aftershock. I was going to do a large talk on this, but look on page 176, 177. If I had the funds, every one of these graphic novels I would buy because they all sound fascinating. So, again, your mileage may vary, but check it out because we're not going to hear it because we got new stuff to talk about, not just old stuff. For example, in Ablaze, right on page 178, Welcome to Happy Land, an extreme amusement park. This is, I guess this is manga, Ablaze manga. Shingo Honda, two volumes. The Komiya family is not unusual in any way. Two parents love each other and their two kids. The kids are healthy, happy, and accomplished at school with all extracurriculars. In appearance to the ideal family, it has everything going for them. At least that's what they believe until the father decides to take him to spend a day at Happy Land Park. In this park, with its extreme attractions, the most shameful secrets will emerge in the most literally explosive way possible. A horrifying and gory tale of survival begins in this first of two volumes, which I appreciate because a lot of times when I jump and I read the manga section, and I always read it, it's like, this is volume 257. Okay, I don't want to read the other 256, nor do I necessarily want to start something if I don't know how long I'm going to be on for it. Because this is, again, this is manga price. This isn't comic book price, $12.99. But it's only done in two. And you can also get a preview there on page 179 and, of course, a little scan box that you can check more out with. Where else are we here? Anything else from Ablaze?
Not for me.
I'm just going to point out on page 189, Animal Castle Mixed Format Collector Set. Something else that Ablaze is doing where they put together a set with, this is a hardcover based with the remaining periodicals. So you get a chance to get some good variant covers. You get the hardcover for a pretty decent price. So that's it for me.
The next publisher in this area is Massive. And if you look, they are just, what they say is they're opening the vault. These are all the special covers that they've done for conventions and stuff.
Yeah. Different prices, different things. I didn't see any signed ones. If they had a Wesley Slam signed one, I'd be in all over it. But again, check them out. They go on for a couple pages. I didn't have anything for Zenscope.
And guess who's joined the Premier Publishers? Is it Premier? Is that?
Yep.
Hold on. No, Deluxe.
Deluxe.
Archie has joined the Deluxe Publishers.
Archie. Are you getting anything from Archie?
Not till each story is done. They burned me too many times.
Well, what they've been doing now is they just do the one-shots. Like, they've got Wicked Trinity on page 202. Archie Judgment Day is actually
a three-issue miniseries.
Yeah. So they've got the second of third. And, of course, different variant covers so you can choose it from. And then, of course, what Corey usually finds, well, there's, what we call the current Archie. Archie Friends Blockbuster Movie Original Stories.
Classic Archie.
Classic Archie. And then, of course, the collector, or as I call them, the Crapper Editions. Because they're great to have on the Crapper in case you need something quick to read. Any of those you picking up?
Not really. They're just the regular digests, which is weird because, okay, it's a 192-page digest for $10, but they've also got the 420-page digest that are $12, and then the 1,000-page digests that are $15. So I wait for the biggins. I'm like Al Bundy. I want biggins.
I want the biggins. All right. I don't know what this section is called.
This is
But Dark Horse is first.
Yeah, Dark Horse is with another distributor, but they also distribute through Diamond.
Okay, so you can still get your fix. I've got a couple things. For anything you recommend from here, I've got a couple. I just got to get them keyed up.
Page 214, Grendel Devil's Crucible, Defiance Number 1, written and drawn by Wagner. A new Grendel story from visionary creator Matt Wagner. Grendel Prime has returned to Earth, but things are not as he left them. The pockets of humanity that remain and the Necrolords that rule them have turned against Grendel. Grendel Prime will need to hide his identity as he explores his suddenly hostile home planet. The next thing that I will point out, page 219, Haunt of Fear, Volume 4, paperback. Yep, it's 5 issues of Haunt of Fear for $20. It's an EC book. You buy it. Just buy it. You'll like it.
Don't question it. Yeah.
Then on the next page, Eerie Archives Volume 7. This is after the huge dip in quality after Archie Goodwin left, and it's starting to come back up with the 70s creators. People like Tom Sutton, Ken Kelly, Richard Corbin, Doug Mensch, Basil Golgos, Nick Cootie. These are not twist-ending horror stories. They're more, because when Archie Goodman did it, he was basically doing EC Comics with Black and White and other artists. When they came back to quality in the early 70s, it was very different. They were very different horror stories. So if you're expecting that, you know, you get to the end and there's a twist, most of these stories aren't like this. And the art is what draws you. The stories are up and down. Some of the stories, you've got stories with really great art that aren't very good. You've got really great stories with mediocre art. But I enjoyed Creepy and Eerie after the quality dip at the end of the 60s. So those are the Dark Horse books that I have. Joe, what do you have for Dark Horse?
There's one I'm not going to go too much in. Kill All Immortals. I recommended it way back November 23. It's being resolicited. If you care, go back and listen to our podcast in November, or just go to page 216 and reorder it. The new one is on page 217, Paranoid Gardens Number 1. It's ER meets Doctor Who on acid. Lou is a nurse at the most bizarre care center in the universe. The staff are not entirely human, and the case is downright unearthly. Aliens, ghosts, superheroes, and more creatures plague its hallways as both doctors and patients, and the hospital itself seems to be somewhat self-aware. Lou believes that despite a recent failure at her job, she's been given some sort of higher calling in this mysterious place and decides to rise to the challenge. Along the way, she must fight her way through corrupt staff members, powerful theme park cults, and her own personal demons and trauma to meet this challenge and discover what secrets the garden holds. So a couple different covers, including a diecast cover, which I can't. And again, I don't know if this is a series or whatever, but usually it is. And just a quick start. That's it for me for Dark Horse. IDW. Anything from IDW?
I believe I did not have anything.
All right. I'm just going to point out a couple of things. If you're a Godzilla fan, I did see the Godzilla X Kong movie. It was good. Predictable. My buddy, my old partner, Pat. Oh, he loved it. I love it. I saw it 25 times. But on page 221, you've got Godzilla, Here Be Giants 2. On page 222, there's a new My Little Pony, Maritime Mysteries. On page... Oh, I'm missing something. Oh, I'm sorry. There's another Godzilla right above it. Godzilla, Skate or Die. Australian Skater Punks versus Varian and the King of All Monsters. What else do you need to know? If you're a Star Trek fan, there's a Star Trek Annual 2024 on page 229. And for you Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle fans, on page 225... there you got the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Usagi Yomoto Saturday Morning Adventures number one. So those are the number ones for properties. Again, all of IDW's seems to be just their licensed product and whatever they're pumping off the YouTubes.
They also had also want to point out they had a bunch of layoffs last week.
Yep.
So, oh, remember I said Scott Dunbeer was leaving and he would announce what he's doing next. He will be running his own comic company and he will announce the name of the company and the first books at San Diego.
All right.
So there you go.
Now, here's everybody else. Now, I got a lot of stuff. So I think what we're going to do, I'll do two and then Corey does one. Because otherwise, we're going to get the end of this here podcast, and you can listen to me drone on and on about the 27 things I think you should buy because you won the lottery and I didn't.
And I'll take a nap.
Yes. Or, and if I really get tongue-tied, I'll just ask Kirby, Corey to talk about Kirby again.
Not on a previous episode. I've told enough long stories.
Maybe Didco. You had a pretty good Didco story your way back. On page 229, Aloha Comics. My student spirit, chapter one. You ever envision your own demise, the tranquil repose amidst silk and blossoms? Elijah did until it became his eerie reality. They say ghosts linger where death was abrupt, violent, or where unfinished business calls. But why, of all places, is a young student spirit bound up to his minuscule dorm room? 3-issue miniseries. Like I said, if it sounds interesting. If you are an Umbrella Academy fan, look under Amulet Books on page 230. There is Young Blood hardcover. It's a novel. That's all I need to tell you. Corey, what you got for us first?
I'm going to steal your thunder on one, Joe.
Oh, good. Go for it.
Page 272.
Holy crap.
From Cartoon Books, Thorn, the complete proto-bone college strips from 1982 to 1986 and other early drawings by Jeff Smith. The secret origin of Jeff Smith's bone comes to life. Cartoon Books presents Thorn, the complete proto-comic strips, printing the entire run of his earliest rendering of Jeff Smith's world-famous bone characters for the first time. These comic strips reveal an early version of Bone called Thorn, which was written for a college audience in the 80s. This is a lot like what was Burke Breathitt's college strip?
I don't know. I just looked at the book upstairs. It's also like Frank Cho's University 2.
Yep. And Doonesbury was actually a strip in a college newspaper before it became a regular comic strip. So this is kind of college strips that then crossed over. I'm kind of surprised that for Smith, he went the comic book route rather than the comic strip route. But I imagine by the time you got to the 80s, I've heard stories about how hard it was for comic strips to get picked up to the point where Calvin and Hobbes, Joe, you may have heard this story before. What was the version of Calvin and Hobbes that the syndicate wanted? What was it called?
It's tickling a memory bone, but I don't remember.
Robot Man.
No.
They had a Robot Man character. United Features Syndicate really thought Robot Man was going to be huge. And when they got Calvin and Hobbes, they were like, okay, we like the strip, but can you put Robot Man in it? And Waterston tried a few times and just gave up. And the Robot Man strip came out under another artist and failed spectacularly. Waterston, did he ever do anything?
Probably not.
Okay.
Joe? I have my copy already because I ordered it through Kickstarter. And last podcast, I raved about it. So if you want to hear my review, go back and check it out. Definitely high marks for this one. I reread the entire Bone Saga because after reading this, I was like, oh, I got to read it. And what's fun about it, you see the jokes and the strips that he had set up in his college years and how it's his own. He can do what he wants. He reused them, but repurposed them for Bone. Back on page 255, if you got $8.99, check out this graphic novel from Avery Hill, Hard Switch Graphic Novel. Ada, Hika and Malik are on a mission. One last mission before everything, everywhere shuts down. They're raiding old abandoned spaceships and wrecks for the sometimes expensive parts, and they make just enough money to get by. But living their nomadic exploring life isn't sustainable when they can't afford fuel anymore. Time is coming when the minerals that makes inter-system jumps possible will just run out. When it does, the scattered inhabitants of the vast galaxy will be stuck where they are. Everything will be different unless the discovery in the latest wreck and these three are scavenging can unlock a whole new kind of interstellar transit. Corey, go with your next one. I can't read my... Oh, there it is. Page 260. I'm sorry. Band of Bards. One last goodbye. It's a one-shot. In the year 2096, a man and his dog journey through the barren apocalyptic wastelands that was formerly the United States. On a quest to return home one final time before the Earth becomes uninhabitable, this wanderer stumbles across a tribe of mutant cannibals seeking to devour one of the few surviving human communities. Will he trek on and leave people to their fate, or will he seek redemption for the mistakes of his past? And as it's a one-shot, I'll do it. Corey, what do you got next for us?
On page 273, Lucky Luke by Blutch. Untamed graphic novel. These are a series of graphic novels that have been going on in Europe for years and years and years and years and years and years and years, and they're finally coming here to the U.S. They are Westerns, but they are comedies. A lot. They remind me a lot of reading a Warner Brothers cartoon. A cowboy who shoots faster than his own shadows, his sarcastic horse. This is the Old West at its funniest. And this issue, Lucky Luke enters a small town to drop off at the sheriff's office a young man who tried to steal Johnny Jumper. A few miles down the road, in the middle of nowhere, he suddenly finds himself threatened by a little girl. Young Rose and her brother are currently alone in a cabin after the mysterious disappearance of their parents. Luke will have to investigate, but also take care of the two particularly wild and undisciplined children. Like I said, these are Warner Brothers cartoons on the page. I actually read some of these in the 90s untranslated because that was the only way to get them. And they do come out kind of sparingly here in the U.S. But do yourself a favor, pick up one or two just to see if it's your kind of thing. The art reminds me a lot of Sergio Aragonés in that the figures are very loose and very stylized and really add to the humor. He's so good at facial expressions and reactions and doing the comedy thing happens, then reaction panel that emphasizes the joke. I love this stuff. That and Asterisk have been the greatest additions to European comics coming to the U.S. in a long, long time. Joe?
A couple of things I'm going to point out that were available through Kickstarters and now are available in previews. One of them's ordered again. On page 275, Lady Death Omnibus, Volume 1. If you haven't been buying them through the Kickstarter, it's kind of neat because you get all the extra bling that comes along with it. But here's the Omnibus. I didn't order the Omnibus because I got the individual issues all signed by Peluto and various. But here's your chance to jump in on the story, and it's an Omnibus. Speaking of which, on page 277 under Crusade Comics, you've got Shinraku Omnibus. Again, I've got mine through the Kickstarter. Here's your chance to pick it up if you didn't get it through the Kickstarter. It's got art from Jim Lee, Frank Frazetta, Amanda Connor, Bill Tucci, Mark Silvestri, Joe Quesada, George Perez, Terry Moore, Adam Hughes, Jeff Smith. 36 individual She stories collected into an overpriced hardcover omnibus. And I've got mine sitting here. It's very, very nice. Corey, what do you got next for us?
If you go to page 316.
Oh, you're a fan of Fantagraphics?
Yep, Fantagraphics. I think.
All right.
I think Butch and I talked about this series more than any non-superhero book. Hate is returning.
Yes.
Hate Revisited by Peter Bagg. Peter Bagg returns to the series that defined a generation with this all-new four-issue monthly miniseries. Buddy and Lisa, now middle-aged with free-spirited young adults of their own, confront their own poor decisions as young people in the grungy 90s. Hate was just this wonderful, wonderful comedy series that sort of encapsulated that, that young scumbag weasel type people in the 90s. And he's been going back to it with annuals and now this series. And basically he goes back to, there are all these different points where they could have made their lives better and they didn't. So I love Peter Bagg's stuff. I really do. In a lot of ways, it's cartooning at its best. Joe?
I'm going to stick with Fantagraphics because on page 317, never again will I visit Auschwitz, a graphic family memoir of trauma and inheritance. You know, I love historical graphic novels. Ari Richer weaves together a haunting story of his grand and great-grandfather's imprisonment in Dachau and Auschwitz, and his own awakening to the rise of authoritarianism, I think I got that word right, and anti-Semitism, told from the perspective of four generations of the author's family, spanning the pre-war Germany to post-Trump America. It's both a celebration of Jewish cultural resilience and a warning of democracy's fragility, in the face of the seductive forces of authoritarianism. So I like that type of stuff. I'm back on page 278. Wait a minute.
You're bouncing all over the place.
I'm bouncing all over because I stick with Fantagraphics on page 317. Hog Book and Laser Eyes. It's the perfect graphic novel accompaniment to Barnford's acclaimed Netflix series, Lady Dynamite, depicting her unlikely romance with partner Scott Cassidy. In a twist, the whole charming story is told through the eyes of their adopted rescue dogs. That actually sounds kind of fun. So there you go. You got three great recommendations from Fantagraphics. Corey, what else you got?
There's a fourth.
Oh, what do you got?
On page 318, now number 13, the New Comics Anthology. This comes out every year or two and has a bunch of new comic creators doing new stories. And it's, first off, it's a great anthology. They pick some really good stuff every year, but it's also a great way to kind of get an eye on new comics creators. It's 120 pages for $12.99. And there are going to be three or four great stories in here. The rest of the stories will at least be interesting. You may not like them, but they're going to be interesting, and it's always a good read. Joe?
On page 278, Club Nephilim, number 0. It's from the world of Mercy Sparks. What happens when a demonic black market brothel is overthrown by its own angelic workers? Club exists in the seedy underbelly of the supernatural realm, where powerful elites can go to experience delights and debauchery unheard of to the common person. Where those to whom money is no option can purchase arcane relics and enchanted artifacts with no questions asked. I have no idea if that's an actual sentence, but you get a chance. There's four different covers from Devil's Due. And from Distillery on page 296, The Big Burn. It's a new series debuting. A pair of thieves who sold their souls to the devil recruit a group of their fellow damned for the latest ultimate heist to break into hell and steal their souls back. That actually sounds like a cool miniseries. So there's a couple more you can choose from. What else you got for us, Corey?
Well, Joe, it's that time of year again.
Oh, no. Wait, it's too early for Festivus. What time of year is it?
The time for the Overstreet Comic Book Price Guide.
Hooray!
Now, I don't buy it every year anymore because I don't care what my comics are worth. And to be honest, they're history articles. I usually read them and go, well, that was pretty empty. There's so much more they could put in, which is the opposite of when I got my first batch of them and went, oh my God, there's so much information here. Now I read it and go, wow, this is like the Cliff Notes version of that. But I may pick up a hardcover this year because, Joe, go to page 327. No,
326 has it as well.
325.
Oh, 325. All right, let's see. 3, 4, 5.
A Michael Kaluta Shadow cover that is one of the most beautiful covers I have seen. Oh my gosh, is this good? That's just a beautiful, beautiful cover. And I may buy the book just for that.
Well, if you're like
me, I'm so shallow.
Well, no, because if you're like me and your eyesight's going, you might want to go over to the next page and just buy that Big Over Street Times 2, because it's square bound, larger print, limited edition. Because these particular big books, they list individual lines for everything, so it kind of doubles as a checklist, at least the last one I looked at. And it's okay, very small print, but it's bigger. It's easier to handle for guys like me. And a couple different covers.
Now, are they still spiral bound?
I don't know. It says it's hardcover, and I don't know.
Yeah.
That's what I thought kind of threw me off. But the one I'm looking at, there's a soft cover. You know, I'm going to take that back. It says square bound. I'm sorry.
Yeah, they're both soft covers. If they are spiral bound, they are perfect for if you are going to conventions to use as a checklist.
Yeah, unless you're, you know, one of those hip person that has it on your phone. Like I should be, but I'm not. So, yeah, there you got your Overstreets. I will probably be picking up an Overstreet. I tend to go to Heroes Initiative because they always have one that's more of a limited run. And sometimes
it won't have the Kaluta cover.
We have no idea what it's going to have because they usually announce it later. As a matter of fact, I'll go look for it while we're talking later.
I want the Kaluta cover.
Corey, what you really want to do is go to page 311 because there you've got, you know, I love me a good mystery box. Well, here you've got Dynamic Forces mystery box. They have middle tier for $200. You can also go for the smaller tier, or you could go for the maximum tier that's not even listed here. I believe you'd have to call your it's what they do. It starts off, there's a $100 box, has $200 minimum retail value. The middle box is $200 with a $400 minimum value. The high box for $350 with $450 minimum value. And a very limited time one box for $1,000 with over $1,900 in retail value. Every box is unique, a great value. And all I know is when Dynamic Forces has their Black Friday sale, last year they just ran one, but when they run them over a couple days, I pick up so many cool things at so many amazing prices. If I had won the lottery, I'd be going for that one. I'd be, hey, Dynamic Forces, ship it to me. But if you like a good mystery box, I've never been steered wrong with anything from Dynamic Forces. Or, let's see, you can go to page 214 under Fair Square Comics. For a $24.99, you can check out, let's see if I say this right, Tinnis to Sydney. It's a graphic novel. When Leela receives the devastating news of her parents' tragic death in a car accident, staggering 10,000 miles away, she's consumed by a profound sense of shock. The weight of unspoken questions surface. Did she feel her parents by not being there through them throughout the years? As they hastily journey for the funeral, Bill stands steadfastly by her side, offering unwavering support. Yet this journey unveils the fault lines in her life, leading to her to confront a cascade of profound questions. An olive tree, symbol of peace and healing, owned by her parents, become the center of attention, triggers a dramatic situation that would change her forever. It's a poignant graphic novel that delves into the labyrinth of grief, resilience in the face of loss, and the complexity of human relationship. So there you go. $24.99 square bound, or go buy that mystery box for $1,000. We give you choices here, people. Lots of choices. What do you got next, Corey?
On page 351, I am not buying this, but I do want to point it out because Defenders of the Earth, trade paperback, this actually reprints the Marvel miniseries, which was when Flash Gordon, the Phantom, Mandrake the Magician, and super strong Luthor, his manservant, team up against Ming the Merciless. This was based on a children's animated series back in the early 90s and is being reprinted. Joe, I have to run to the bathroom or I'm going to make a mess all over my floor.
All right. I'm just going to keep talking until you get back.
Okay.
All right. On page 330, under Graphic Mundi, and Mankind Created the Gods graphic novels. Actually, both their graphic novels sound really interesting. And again, like I said, had you won the lottery, you could buy them all. Anyways, And Mankind Created the Gods. Why does religion exist? Why does religion exist? Why do people believe? Do all religions start with the same basic idea? These are some of the most fundamental and enduring questions we have about the mysteries of religion, and they may well hold the key to humankind's future on this earth. In this adaptation of Pascal Boyer's classic works, exploring these concepts, Religion Explained, that's the name of Pascal's book, but artist Joseph Bay harnesses the power of comics to provide clear answers to the basic questions about why religion exists, why people believe. His book is rich with insight into the endless jumble of ideas that inform religious beliefs and practices across cultures. It's detailed, illustrated drawings, and carefully adapted prose. Brings a new perspective to Boyer's work. So I got to pick up not only this, but probably Boyer's work as well. Underneath it, everything eventually connects. This is a collection of 8 autobiographical visual essays from Sarah Firth that explore the joys and pains of living in a hyper-complex and uncertain world. Her sprawling and colorful style, Sarah pursues some of life's deepest philosophical questions about happiness, hope, love, sex, death, truth, reality, and the definition of self. She weaves together a mixture of great ideas and silly ones deriving not only from her own lived experience, but also from her daydreams, pop culture, memes, and the teaching of science, philosophy, and history. Her musings ultimately lead her to consider how to live a more joyously in a troubling world, and how to be more compassionate towards oneself, others, and the planet. Again, 2 very heavy books. If you're so inclined, check them out. Or go to page 334, pick up Stable. This is published by, so we'll go back, Gunnier Entertainment. Earth is dying. Yeah, I said heavy book, right? The last hope for humanity lies on 3 arcs that will take a chosen 300,000 people to a new planet in an alien solar system. But what awaits them in their new home is not what they were expecting. Again, a lot of graphic novels this month, and I don't expect everybody to buy everything, but maybe you'll hear something that'll tweak your interest. Corey, what do you got for us next?
I have something that is so not heavy. Matter of fact, it's lighter than air. Good, on page 371, Spicy Zeppelin Stories. For decades, this legendary pulp magazine was believed to be a myth, but it was not. Well, not exactly. Nor was it real. Back in the 1970s, prolific pulp writer Will Murray, who was not yet prolific, undertook the daunting task of this nebulous non-entity of a magazine. Within these pages, you will discover the exciting contents of Spicy Zeppelin Stories, Volume 1, Number 1, October 1936, just as they would have appeared if this magazine ever existed. 7 slightly salacious stories set in the 1930s, one for each of the dominant pulp genres. Yes, they're all here. Thrilling adventure, air war, mystery, G-Men, weird menace, space opera, and even a Western. Everyone written around an airship of some type. Now, when you look at pulps, the ones that had some sex in it, and I'm not talking about, you know, like what we would think of. It was 1930s sex, so it was very much a, she removed her top. And then we can move on to, you know, the rest of the story. They were called spicy. So, like when you're at Dreamhaven, you see spicy detective stories and spicy Western and blah, blah, blah. Spicy was what they used for stuff that might have a little bit of sex in it. So, these are Spicy Zeppelin Stories. Now, I've read up a little on this. This magazine, people believed it existed for years and years and years. And it was one of those where, you know, the collectors were hunting it down. So, Will Murray decided, you know, he was a young pulp fan in the 70s. I'll just write it. Joe.
All right, back on page 335. I think it's Syn, C-Y-N, from Humanoids. Fleeing her bloody past as the masked government enforcer known as Syn, Ursus is discovered unconscious by former Union medic and his two adopted daughters. As they nurse her back to health, she struggles to adapt in a world far from the brutal life she was forced to lead as Syn. Two things become clear. Her past isn't ready to let her go, and she isn't the only one whose dark secret history is threatening to destroy their presence. Still with Humanoids on page 340. Total suplex of the heart. Now, I may be punning a song, but this is actually kind of a pro wrestling type tie-in. Young freelance journalist Georgie joins a local wrestling circuit to investigate a new article, making friends and more than friends along the way. But is the validation she gets from the sport worth the drama that comes along with it? Yeah, that alone is kind of like, yeah, whatever. But they give you, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 pages of preview. And I love a good wrestling story. So this is on my maybe list. So, and I think that's it from Humanoids. Corey, what do you got next for us?
Joe, go to page 379.
379. All right. Okay.
Back from the grave, driven by vengeance. EC returns in summer of 2024 from Oni Press. I've talked about this before, but this is the first ad for it. I'm going to be very interested to see what they do. Because the Tales from the Crypt from Papercut seems to have gone down the memory hole and nobody remembers it. Even though, while it wasn't Tales from the Crypt good, it was still an okay horror comic that was kind of aimed a little at kids because of the Tales of the Crypt Keeper cartoon. But these guys say, nope, we're going to do modern versions of EC, so we'll see what we see. Joe?
On page 346, under Inhabit Media, The Cannibal. Based on an Inuit traditional story passed down orally for generations, The Cannibal tells the horrific tale of a family experiencing starvation when the animals they rely on for survival disappear. While the wife stays alive by eating plants she gathers daily, the husband does the unthinkable, resorting to murder and cannibalism. Horrified and terrified for her life, the wife eventually finds herself alone in camp with her husband, knowing what will happen to her if she does not find a way to escape. Hatching a plan, the exhausted wife embarks on a journey with her murderous husband in pursuit. Oof, sounds horrific and poignant. So I definitely, that actually caught my attention. On the same page, directly under it, under Invader Comics, back to Fairylia. I'm pronouncing that right. Fairtalia. I guess once upon a time, childhood friends found a magical doorway to Fairtalia, an enchanted realm full of wizardry and wonder. 20 years later, they are a bunch of self-absorbed adults who don't believe in fairy tales anymore, till a talking squirrel and a chainsaw-wielding fairy show up on their doorsteps. Fast-paced quest to save the land from an unspeakable evil, the gang has to evade wicked witches, battle orcs, ogres, and break into Cinderella's castle while surfing through fairy farts, yes, I said that right, Skippy outfits, and several musical numbers. Good luck with Happily Ever After. Corey?
Joe, go to page 381.
Oh, which one? Hey. What are you going for? What are you going for?
Pan-Universal Galactic Worldwide presents New Mutants number 98, the Pan-Dimensional 3D edition. I have no idea how Marvel allowed this, but they have. From comic book legend and renegade Rob Liefeld, revisit the first appearance of Deadpool. Every full-color page has been meticulously converted into classic red and blue 3D by Anomaly Publications. All issues are polybagged and include a pair of 3D glasses. Again, I have no idea how he got Marvel to approve this, but Rob was able to get them to approve him putting out a 3D version. I don't know if I'm getting it or not. I just find it utterly fascinating.
Yeah, it's again, I gotta tally up everything I want, and this is on the maybe list. So in the kitty corner, as long as you're on page 31, Rescue Party from Pantheon Books. On April 1st, 2020, the Instagram account of Desert Island, Brooklyn's celebrated alternative comic shop, put out a call. By then, Desert Island had been shuttered indefinitely, and cities all over the world had been locked down as the first wave of COVID-19 pandemic took hold. We all need something positive to think about, and a lot of us have time on our hands, the post read. Who wants to make something? What happened next was nothing short of remarkable, as hundreds of short comics from more than 50 countries poured into Desert Island's inbox. Some came from notable cartoonists. Most astonishingly came from amateur artists just looking for an outlet to create in the midst of tragedy. So this is collected in a book. There's more than 140 notable entries from Rescue Party Project. It captures the loneliness and surprising comfort of the early lockdown, the mania of the middle days as the mind begins to fray, and the many paths forward toward humanity's future. So that actually sounds kind of interesting, listed as a full book. As long as we're, I'm still way back on page 358, though. I'm catching up, I promise, because under Mad Cave is a 5-issue series called The Mammoth. The dead will lead the way. Something is wrong in the deep forests of the Broke Tree Valley. Something deadly, something mammoth. The legends speak of something larger than human comprehension. A monstrous phantom that disappears for decades at a time. Now it's back, and things are about to go very bad for four people. Olivia, Jess, Kuroko, Marson, scientists who have come to the small city of Casbro to investigate a bizarre series of seismic activities in this heavy forested valley. Sorry, they had a weird sentence there. I guess if they can't put the mammoth to rest. Oh, by the way, remember the four people? Olivia, one of the people, is dead. So that's intriguing. On page 364, I say that as I'm slowly doing the pages, we're under Magma Comics, Hell's Half Acre number one. Life is changing in 1904 Nashville, but the sins of the past live free in a place called Hell's Half Acre, where you can find gambling, sex, and most every other debauchery ever dreamed of. None do it better than Miss Marion's, where a mystery gambler arrives. His name is Brett. Sets in motion a chain of events that will have lawmen and outlaws alike aiming to put him 6 feet under. Will the woman that Brett scorned be his downfall or salvation when they come calling? There is a little code there so you can see more. The description there really is intriguing. So again, if you really want to check it out, they have variant covers. And this will be, I guess this is June. So a little bit far away, but not that far. Corey, what do you got for us next?
If you go to page 392, the final volume of The Best of 2000 AD, it is a 6-volume trade paperback set. What's fascinating to me about this is this was originally, at the beginning of the before the pandemic, going to be just a 6-issue miniseries. With the pandemic, they canceled it, and then they restarted it about a year and a half ago. As trade paperbacks, they've been fantastic. I use the word fantastic way too much, but they've just been great books. If you don't know anything about 2000 AD, they highlight the characters. They have, this is a mix of modern classics and gems from the vault in each edition with an explosive new Judge Dredd cover. They have essays about the characters and about 2000 AD. So if you don't know anything about British comics, but want to learn, these books are the best way to do it. It gives you a look into 2000 AD, which has been going since 1977 as a weekly comic. It's where Judge Dredd came from. It's where Alan Moore came from. It's where, gosh, you name a British comic creator, they started at 2000 AD. There was a podcast called It All Starts with 2000 AD. Sadly, I don't know if they are updating anymore because I never get updates on it. But they put out, they talk about the history of this weekly comic that has been going on gosh, since Star Wars. Think about that. Joe?
A couple properties I'm going to point out, if you're so inclined, on Oni Press. Rick and Morty's got a new series, Finals Week, The Wrath of Beth. Under Paper Cuts, on page 282, 283, a couple Disney properties. So Disney's still got their properties out there. The New Adventures of Disney and Kanto. I remember my daughters watching that. Also across from it, Disney, Phineas and Ferb's Classic Comic Collection. And you got hardcovers and paperbacks to choose from. So you got a good choice. If you're looking for something new, go to page 286. Pocket Jack Comics has Guinevere and the Divinity Factor. It's like Harry Potter, but slutty. A former stripper seeks to become a spellcasting witch. She attends a party by the great wizard Gatsby, who gives her an amulet to see into the world, the spirit world, and sends her on a quest to demonstrate her character. A couple different sexy covers to choose from. Main retail cover, the Guinevere spirit cover, a succubus cover, and a flapper girl cover. Take that for what it is. Harry Potter, but slutty. Corey?
I'm going to go to tomorrow's. Going to point out two things. One is that Alter Ego number 89 is the John Romita Senior Tribute issue. So this is it has a transcript of a podcast recorded shortly after John Romita's passing, featuring John Romita Jr., Jim Starlin, Steve Englehart, Brian Polito, Roy Thomas, Jamie Jameson, John Cimino, Steve Houston. It also has a con interview and all sorts of other stuff about John Romita Sr., who passed away recently. But then on page 401, it's being reprinted because, oh my gosh, it sold out immediately. Jack Kirby's Dingbat Love. Tomorrow's compiles a tempestuous trio of never-seen 1970s Kirby projects. These are the final, complete, unpublished Jack Kirby stories in existence. Two unused Dingbats of Danger Street, which was a kid gang comic he did in the 70s that DC thought would sell well, but they canceled it before the sales figures even came back. True Life Divorce, which was going to be a black and white magazine. And Soul Love, another black and white magazine, a 70s romance comic featuring African Americans. I have this book. It is fantastic. Again, I use the word fantastic. Just this stuff that we never saw from Jack Kirby that was sitting in DC's vaults finally gets printed. When I read these, I'm so upset that Kirby's four black and white magazines DC never got behind them. Now, DC has printed In the Days of the Mob, which was one that got printed, and then they put out a nice book of it. Then Spirit World, which was going to be a horror magazine, which they printed one issue of, and then the other stories ended up in the DC horror anthologies. But they never published True Life Divorce Tales or Soul Love, so we finally get them here. And you know me, any Kirby that I've never seen before is going to be tops on my list. Joe?
All right, let's see, where are we? Page 396 under Scout. Sudden Death Trade Paperback. After a tragic accident, Hank Kelly learns that he is immortal and cannot die. This throws Hank into the spotlight, where he is showered with attention and loved by people across the world. However, his powers come with a dark consequence, one of which shakes the life of police officer Roland Lovejoy. As Hank tries to use his newfound fame to reconnect with his family, he is unknowingly stalked by Lovejoy, who is determined to bring out the truth. On page 399, under 10 Speed Press, Stamped from the Beginning, it's a striking graphic novel edition of the National Book Award-winning history of how racist ideas have shaped American life. Racism has persisted throughout history, but so have anti-racist efforts to dismantle it. Through deep research and a gripping narrative that illustrates the lives of five key American figures, preeminent history, Abram X. Kendi reveals how understanding and improving the world cannot happen without identifying and facing the racist forces that shape it. in collaboration with award-winning historian and comic artist Joel Christian Gill, the stunningly illustrated graphic novel adapts Dr. Kendi's groundbreaking work, explores the living history of America, and how we can learn from the past to work towards a more equitable future. That's it for me. Well, I got a couple of things in manga. Corey, you got anything else?
Yes, I do.
Oh, my gosh.
Page 402.
402.
The complete Wally Wood from Wit's End hardcover.
Oh.
Wally Wood did an underground comic in the 60s called Wit's End, in which he had his own stories, but he also had other comic artists who wanted to kind of not have to deal with the comics code. They saw these underground comics doing well, so Wally Wood decided to publish one himself. It came out sporadically, but in the ones that he published, he always had a story in them. So, let's see here. Wit's End includes his stories of Animal Man, Sally Forth, The Rejects, Bucky Ruckus, Pipsqueak Papers, The Wizard King, Snorky, Lunar Tunes, and more. In addition to the standard edition, there is a slipcase deluxe edition with 16 bonus pages. This is from Vanguard Publication, which I believe is owned by Glenn Danzig. Is that right? Joe doesn't know.
I don't know, actually.
I believe that it's owned by Glenn Danzig, because it's been around forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. I do not have any manga, Joe, so go ahead.
All right. I've just a couple of things I'm going to point out. If you're a Street Fighter fan, you want to check out Undun's on page 418, 419, because they have Street Fighter Masters Game Gals number 1. And then there's a Swimsuit Special Collection Volume 2 hardcover with a bunch of different covers so you can choose. But the book I'm really interested in, because I'm very ignorant when it comes to manga, on page 452, The Essential Manga Guide, 50 series every manga fan should know. Dive into the world of manga and discover 50 of the most influential and essential series and standalone titles with this must-have guide for manga fans. She provides a comprehensive behind-the-scenes look into the history and the growing legacy of manga. Both casual fans and serious collectors alike will discover an entertaining and personal look through the impact of these outstanding titles and their authors. See, titles include Berserk, Bleach, Fruits Basket, Inuyasha, My Lesbian Experience with Loneliness, Naruto, Sailor Moon. There's a lot here listed. Again, there's 50. This may be a book I'll pick up because, again, I'm woefully ignorant when it comes to manga. I do read through everything, but a lot of it's just like, well, there's volume number 20. Well, if I didn't catch it at volume 1. So a couple things to point out. I'm done, believe it or not. Corey, you got anything else for us?
I do not. So, Joe, it's all time right. To flip the book.
Pick the book up, flip it over. And this is for Brian. Brian, I've been relatively easy on you the last couple months. Not this month. I hope you won that lottery because you're going to need it. There's a lot of cool stuff coming up. Corey, do you want to start? Because I've got like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I got like 9 things that I
hate. Holy cat.
I know.
I have one.
All right, go for it.
Page 60.
I'm not even on that page. Let's go for it.
Pop, WWE Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels Moments vinyl figure. It is based on their feud back, I think, what was it, WrestleMania 15? Comes with a ring and the figure of Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels from their hour-long, what was that? Iron Man match, from the Iron Man match.
Oh. Well, as long
as a lot of people say it was not a good match, I strongly disagree. They kept me on the edge of my seat for an hour, and that's all I want from my wrestling.
As long as you're pushing pop figures, because we know Brian's a pop maniac, right above it is the WWE Stone Cold Steve Austin with belt vinyl figure. So I recommend that. And then I also recommend for Pop, go way back to page 33. There is the Queen. This is actually offered again, so he might actually have it. But it's the Pop Rocks Queen Wembley Stadium 1986 Moments Deluxe Vinyl Figures. That one's just a mere $70. Or you could go, you know, $11 for the Stone Cold, or go $35 for the Iron Man match. Now, Brian, you've got to expand outside of your pop obsession. So I recommend go to page 42. There you've got the Walking Dead Daryl Dixon exquisite mini exclusive 1/18 scale figure from Hiya Toys. I mean, come on. Daryl's awesome. If Daryl dies, oh, things are going to burn. You want to go a little more expensive, a little more cool? Well, on page 44. And again, these are ones I've been seeing in my ads on Facebook, but here they are. Red Sonja Epic Hacks figure from Boss Flight Studio. Very gorgeously sculpted. It's her 50th anniversary. It's a great way to celebrate it. 30 points of articulation. But if that doesn't float your boat, go to page 48. There is a life-size Groot. Now, I know this is a life-size Groot statue. And, of course, next to it is the life-size Star-Lord figure. But the Groot's much cooler because I know, Corey, I know Brian's got an extra $13,000 lying around to buy this for the Groot, and probably another $15 to buy the Star-Lord is a mere $13,000. Groot will set you back $14,399. And tell you what, Brian, I'll get you the first buck I've got sitting here in my pocket so you can buy yourself that life-size Groot and Rocket Raccoon statue. Boy, won't your girlfriend be impressed. Okay, let's get you back to reality here. On page 51, you've got, there it is, the Blues Brothers 1974 Dodge Monaco police car with figures and the big speaker they had on top. It's only $104. Okay, you're going to let me down and not call it the life-size group. That's fine. Well, let's really, I've been pretty heavy this episode. Some of the graphic novels I've recommended were really, really tough. So let's go to page 77. There you go. Get yourself the Transformers Ultimate Wave 4 Dead Optimus Prime figure. Who else? Who needs a live one? Let's get the one that made all the kiddies cry when the movie came out and he turned gray and his head went, I had to jump forward because I was going to point out something that cracked me up. For a mere $21.99, you can have the Chainsaw Man Anime Heroes figure. I mean, just go to page 70 and look at that sucker. You tell me that don't look cool. If you got yourself a Leatherface figure, which I've recommended earlier, you got yourself a pairing there. Now, in the games, on page 82, I don't know if Brian's a gaming guy, but one of the coolest games I ever played growing up was Axis and Allies. Never finished a game because it just went on forever, but it was a lot of fun to play and set up. Well, here's a G.I. Joe Axis and Allies game. It's Battle for the Arctic Circle board game. So if you're ready for a fight, air, land, and sea of the Arctic Circle battlefield, you could be the forces of Cobra, led by Cobra Commander and Destro, or be the Admiral Keyhole and Snow Job leading the G.I. Joes. There's over 100 plastic miniatures, and it has the classic Axis and Allies gameplay with it. So that, I'm way beyond playing games because all my friends have either passed away or moved away. So, but if I was in the midst of my gameplay, we played Axis and Allies, Shogun, Conquest of the Empire. This would be right in our wheelhouse. So there you go, Brian, from the cheap to the grossly expensive. We've given you some options. We want to see some pictures of these things you've been buying, by the way. So just, you know, and we'd even recommend the Weapon H statue, because I don't think Corey and I are necessarily impressed by it.
Or could afford it.
Yeah, there's that too. But we know Brian can. And he's the one who suggested you never cover the toys, so let's cover them.
Well, there is that. Yeah,
so you brought it on yourself. That's all, folks.
You know what we need to do to order to in order to afford all this stuff, Joe?
I'll play the lottery. I think it's going to play again Friday. So.
No, we need to have ads. So here are our sponsors. Our newest sponsor is NordVPN. Let's be honest, if you're out on the internet, you need a VPN to protect you. There's all sorts of things going on the internet where people can track you. You could accidentally download a keylogger, all sorts of things. NordVPN gives the best security possible. It has a password manager, which generates complex passwords, syncs across all your devices, stores your notes and credit card information. It also gives you 10 gigabytes of private cloud storage, secure files that backs up your data automatically. But the main thing it gives you is peace of mind. It gives you peace of mind when you're out on the internet, when you're streaming, when you're playing games, when you're listening to podcasts like this one. It gives you safety anywhere at any time. It protects your online activity. You get full access to all content. And if you use the link go.nordvpn.net/SH3KU, it'll take you to where you can get a great deal for a one-month plan, a two-year plan, a one-year plan. They are our newest sponsor. We're happy to have them. And if you would like to sponsor something here at any of the podcasts on the Solitaire Rose Network, you can. Just email me, solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks. Because we've been going on now for 2.5 hours.
I told you it was a big previews.
One freaking, one geeking, Joe. What are you freaking on?
Oh, they've messed up my schedule at work. I'm trying not to swear because I was swearing. You know, I bid on the one line. Well, they had changed the lines from when I got the lines to now. And yeah, they're like, well, you probably should have double checked. Whatever. But they're like, oh, okay, so you bid on this line. Okay, it's available. So you got Tuesday, Wednesday off. No, that's not the line I want. I want off the 10-hour days. 3 days off a week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Pause, pause, pause. Okay, I switched it. You're down for it. 8 hours later, I get a call. Hey, I thought you were going to bid on that line. They got you down for Thursday or Wednesday, Thursday. So I call up and I say, hey, there's a mess up. Oh, well, somebody's got that line. You know, and again, there's probably been like 120 people, if not more, have bid between then and now. So I don't know what the hell's going to happen. I was pissed. I had to call back and apologize because I was pissed. And I just said, you really effed me up here. You know, I don't have many rights other than seniority rights. So I'm pretty freaked about that. And I imagine I'll revisit that next week. Here I thought I'd say, hey, I got this open. Corey and I can figure out when we're going to do our podcast, blah, blah, blah. Nope. So anyways, that's what I'm freaking about. Corey, what you freaking on?
Bob Beerbohm, who was a longtime comic retailer, comics fan, comics historian. Did I talk about him last week?
I don't think so.
Bob Beerbohm, who was one of the original comic retailers, he actually started his business with Bud Plant, had a falling out with him, started another comic shop in San Francisco, was one of the first people to sell Zap Number Zero by Robert Crumb. Passed away after a long illness. He had been working on a book called The Comic Shop Wars for the past, it feels like forever. He has been around on the internet talking comics since I first signed up for the Timely Atlas Yahoo mailing list in the early 90s. He was there when comics started. When the direct market started, he was involved in early undergrounds. He worked for Diamond. He was a prickly sort of guy. He was a guy who, he had a temper, but anytime he lashed out at people, it was because he felt that the comic creators he cared about were getting shafted, that they weren't getting their due. And he and I rubbed each other the wrong way at times. When every so often I will post something about how I'm really tired of Stan Lee getting dumped on, because no matter what, you have to remember, when Stan Lee started in comics, nobody got credits. Nobody got, he did not have to put people's names in the credit boxes. DC didn't do it till the 70s, but he did it early on. He was the editor. He was the head writer at Marvel because his boss was too cheap to allow him to hire writers. And I said that he was one of the best editors comics ever saw. And Bob took very much the side that Stan Lee was a charlatan who stole credit from everybody. But Bob really, really cared about comics. He really cared about the artists and writers that he enjoyed. I hope he got his book done before he passed, because it was something that was very dear to his heart. And he's one of those guys. He had the first comic shop in San Francisco back in the 60s. So he is a part of comics history. And I'm kind of freaking that he has passed away. And again, I really hope he got his book done before he passed. Joe, what are you geeking on?
I'm going to have a geek day on Saturday.
Ew.
I actually took the 13th off for a couple of reasons. And I didn't talk about it last time because I didn't want to, like, spoiled the fun we had with Eric and his new shop opening on Saturday. But that's just one of the fun things. I'm going to run up to St. Cloud because there's a Quad City show having a con in the mall. And of course, as I'm talking about this, it's already in this post. It'll be in the past. And it's interesting because it's the shopping mall, and it's like 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. and you can't leave early. Otherwise, you won't be invited back. A lot of dealers from up north are going there. I heard rumors that our old friend Tim from Granite City, he's starting the various stage of purges that my partner Pat and I have been doing for years. And I think I told this story about trying to get gold issues last time, so I'm not going to repeat it. But I'm curious to see just how deep a dive Tim's going to be going. Plus, Granite City will be having a sale. Then I'm going to trek back into the cities because our old pal Kelly at EAKK has got a Comic-Con up at the Mermaid in Moundsview. And his goes till 5 o'clock, I believe, 10 to 5. So if I get up there early, get there right away at 10, I can run around, hit the shop, get back here by 1 o'clock, go there. Then I'm going to go down and check out Eric's shop because he's reopening Mind's Eye. That was the last podcast that dropped. If you didn't get the chance to listen to it, go listen to it. Eric's a fantastic speaker, and I'm super excited. You don't often hear of a shop closing and reopening, especially under the same name and the same people. So I'm real excited to see what he goes. He's got oodles of fun ideas, and I'm going to bring that old wrestling ring out that we used to have at Hot Comics and give it to
him. Yeah!
And I found it. It's just sitting in the back of my – it's not in my storage bin. It's actually sitting in the basement. So I know where it is. I'm going to bring that out and give it to him. On top of that, if there's time left, there's other shops. I think Most Wanted's got an event going on, but it's Saturday, so whatever doesn't close. On top of that, I should knock on plastic. I think my boxes are on the way. It says it will show up Thursday, which means hopefully Friday morning I can pick it up from my buddy. Pat, because I haven't delivered at his house ever since, was it a year ago or so, where mine got lifted off my steps during the Christmas break. So, free, you know, I got that. I've got New Comic Day. I'm slowly weeding through Mike's collection that I picked up, you know, and again, it, you know, not a lot of valuable stuff, but there's things I'll put aside, like, I don't think I've ever read this. I think I'll put it aside and read it. So lots of comic-y goodness to kind of hopefully lift the doldrums I have because my schedule at work's all fucked up. I've got 2 years, 10 months, 14 days, 3 hours and 16 minutes. No, 3 hours and 20 minutes as of we're talking in this podcast before I can leave, retire. Feels like a goddamn prison sentence. Sorry. I'm freaking Corey. What you geeking on?
I have said all over the place. I covered 17 wrestling shows last week.
Slacker. I mean, oh, good for you.
And I have to admit, yes, it was hard. It was exhausting because you're typing as fast as you could go. And I don't know a lot of these indie wrestlers, so I'm looking them up. And the sound quality from the ring announcers was always terrible. So it was, crawling to the ring at this time.
Orange drink. Cheeseburger. Onion rings and a large drink.
There was silliness. There was exciting matches. There were matches between people who'd known each other for years. So much fun stuff. I became a huge fan of Tokyo Joshi Wrestling, which is the Tokyo Women's Wrestling Company, because it's very much based on silliness and over-the-top characters, and it's just so much fun to watch. There was one character who, she comes to the ring with a pillow. And if she gets, there was a match where she got knocked into the corner, and her pillow was there, so she fell asleep on the pillow. And her opponent very quietly pulled her into the middle of the ring and put the pillow down, put her head on it. And the referee was like, one, two, oh, and then she woke up. Or, you know, more, just one woman who's 4'10", they call the kaiju. And she wrestles like she's, you know, Andre the Giant. Just silliness and goofiness, but you also had serious stuff. And the one thing I want to say, 5 years ago when I started doing this, I got all the deathmatch shows. And I hate deathmatches because it's not wrestling. It's just, okay, here's a bunch of weapons. We're just going to beat each other with them for 10 minutes and then somebody wins. But that company, GCW, Game Changer Wrestling, has evolved to the point where they didn't have any deathmatches at all. And I thought it was fantastic. They put on such a good show. They had all kinds of wrestling, everything from very serious matches to super silly matches. And it was just a lot of fun. And I still have to watch the Hall of Fame, where Paul Heyman was inducted and everybody said was the best Hall of Fame ever. WrestleMania was two nights, and every review is it's the best WrestleMania ever. So I've got so much to look forward to, and I've still got other shows that ran over WrestleMania weekend that I didn't watch and didn't cover. And the head reporter at PW Insider sent me, oh, here's a code for the Tokyo Joshi show that's pay-per-view, blah, blah, blah. He said, and you don't have to cover it if you don't want to. And I said, wait, hold on. I can watch a wrestling show and not cover it? That's just crazy talk. Believe it or not, kids, talking about crazy talk, we talked about comics for almost 3 hours.
Oh, yeah, my mouth's a little dry here.
I'm going to need a nap. And as we say every week, the comics we like the least, we still like better than the comics that you like the most, Joe.
Why didn't Tony Stark like his new assistant? He wasn't happy. For that, Corey, hit my music.
Done, bitches!